You're visiting us at Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, and we are here today with one of my favorite people who has been on the program before, but since this is such a hot topic, we thought we'd have him come back. This is Patrick Faranga. Patrick is president of the Holt Associates, publisher of Growing Without Schooling. As much of our audience may know, this is about homeschooling. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Daria.
Patrick, you have a tremendous amount of things to your credit, and some of which are, you know, the Growing Without Schooling magazine, which is tremendous, and I have a copy of it here. Oh, you even have John Holt's bookstore you sent me with a variety of, there are a tremendous amount of tapes and books and things of that nature for people. So we'll talk about all these things throughout the conversation. You are also a lecturer and are available to people for lectures. I wanted to point that all out before, in the event that I forget somewhere down the line. Let's talk a little bit about the Holt Associates. The Holt Associates comes from the name John Holt, and he was very prominent a long time ago in the 60s, but for those who don't remember him, could you give us a little bit of information about John Holt?
Certainly. John was a fifth grade teacher in private schools in Colorado and then again in Massachusetts. And during his about 15 years of teaching fifth grade primarily, he came to a disturbing conclusion that he taught and the children didn't learn. And he wanted to find out what that was all about. And he was able to find a teacher at one of his schools, a gentleman by the name of Bill Hull. And John only taught at very ritzy private schools. I mean, I forget which school it was, but one of them wouldn't allow first graders in unless they had an IQ of 160 or higher, for instance.
Was this in Boston?
Oh, yeah, all around the Boston area. And he is often mistaken as someone working with inner-city poor kids. But his very first book called How Children Fail was based on the memos that he and Bill Hull wrote, because what they decided to do to try and figure out why it is that they teach but the kids don't learn was that while Bill taught, John sat in the back of a classroom and watched what was going on with the students. And without belaboring the point, that became the basis of John's first book, How Children Fail, which became an international bestseller, has remained in print since it first came out in 1962, and it's been translated into over 14 languages now. Remarkable insights into the what Holt called the learning charade, how the kids were able to play the learning game and the teachers went along with it, and indeed sometimes unwittingly giving the kids the cues on how to play the game. And as soon as the danger was passed, usually in the form of a test, the kids promptly forgot what they learned. And John wanted to know why. So he spelled that out in How Children Fail. Then its companion book, 2 years later, How Children Learn, came out. And in it, John decided that since the learning that was going on in school was, as he termed it, a charade, what is real learning like? So John studied kids who were not in school, and, you know, usually kids under six. And this book is also a well-known factor. It's interesting, as time has gone on, How Children Fail was always the one that outsold How Children Learn, but now How Children Learn is going through quite a renaissance in sales. Both books are available from HarperCollins, by the way, and have, as I said, have been in print since they first came out. But John revised both of those in the early 80s because, and again, he wrote 11 books. I'm not going to go through all 11 of them. But after How Children Learn, he wrote nine other books, and during the course of working there, John gave up on school reform. There was a book called The Underachieving School that he wrote in 1968. He felt that schools really didn't want to be different, that they just wanted to be more of the same. And I think this is borne out in all the current school reforms. I mean, we have more testing, more standards, more everybody do the same thing at the same time, or else, you know, you're going to fail, and failing means that you're going to lose all these opportunities in life. And, you know, John's original point that school is really not about learning, it's about separating the winners into losers for society, I think is being borne out more and more as we see so-called school reforms go. But what Holt did was abandon the schools, at least in terms of his direct actions. He always hoped indirectly that his actions would help change schools for the better, and started looking around for other options. This took him into the realm of children's rights. It took him into the realm of alternative schools, and eventually In 1976, he wrote a book called Instead of Education, where he proposes to abandon the whole idea of education and just help kids learn. And then parents wrote to him saying that, oh, you don't need to do this, you can teach them yourself. And that's when Holt got fascinated with the whole idea of teaching children outside of school. He didn't realize it was a legal possibility, frankly. Although there is evidence that we have many books in the office from that time, such as Ivan Illich's Deschooling Society, where the idea was put forth, but John just didn't realize that people were actually doing it and wanted to help organize that. And so we started our magazine in 1977 called Growing Without Schooling. And that was the first publication probably in the world to deal with homeschooling. And also he had to revise those two bestsellers that I talked about, How Children Learn and How Children Fail, in light of his work with homeschoolers. And in 1982, when those books were revised, it provide fascinating reading to anyone wanting to see not only the change of John Holt's thinking, but also the whole change that schools have gone through. Because Holt didn't eliminate a single word of his original text from the original 60s. He indicates using certain typographic techniques what the new text is. And he actually says things, as the older John Holt reflecting on the younger one, saying, back in 1962, I thought this was a great idea, but now that I've worked with homeschoolers and watched children learn and develop outside of school, I think this was a dumb idea. And the books serve as a model of not only how children learn, but how adults learn, and how teachers learn, and how people change over time, and often for the better.
You know, I still have those original books. I didn't realize that the new book had updated versions. I had no idea whatsoever. I still have my original How Children Learn, How Children Fail from the era of John Holt. So I must go back and look at the footnotes. Does it make for very much longer reading? Or
much, much different.
Oh, really?
In fact, they're not included as footnotes.
It's within the text.
Right in the text. He indents the text and then puts a line, a straight line down the left, so to indicate that this is new. And, for
Amazing.
Instance, in How Children Learn, he added a whole new chapter about fantasy. He was realizing as homeschoolers let their children play more and more than kids were allowed in school. And, you know, certainly in his book How Children Learn, he noted how important play was for kids. But it wasn't until he really worked with homeschoolers that he said, yeah, this is vitally important. So he has a whole chapter in there about fantasy, where he takes the opposing view that, you know, some people, such as Montessori schools, I understand, view fantasy play as an escape from reality. Whereas what John's contribution to the discussion is, no, children use play to get into reality. The whole idea of pretending you're a cop or a plumber or a teacher is their efforts to explore the world and learn about it. It's not some retreat from the world. Certainly that's not true for all children all the time, but by and large it is. And Holt was very proud that he pointed that out. And he indicated that in the early 80s, a lot of his ideas about how children learn are now commonplace, like, you know, young children learning to speak, actually create the knowledge and construct their own learning experiences based on their interactions with the world. People forget that in 1964, when Holt was putting this forth, I mean, most people viewed little babies as tabula rasa, as something that you know, until they were in the world, kids weren't learning. Holt proposed that they were even learning in the womb, and we've since seen that that's true.
Well, certainly a man way before his time. And you know, Patrick, every time you are on this program, I learn something new all the time. You are just so amazing, just totally amazing. I love listening to you. All right, now, as far as, I think probably the reason why How Children Learn is much more in vogue right now is because, number one, it's more positive than How Children Fail. I think we all know how children fail. And I think the issues at the moment are focused on learning as opposed to instruction, which is what we have been thinking about for all of these years. And the Cartesian model, which is 300 years old and that we happen to be ingrained in, was just the sum. We're all trying to get out of the mindset of the sum is equal to the whole, because our new science shows us that the whole is a whole, and there are patterns that are created by holes, and which means that that functioning of parts or chopping up the school day into little bitty pieces and segments no longer is effective. So each of us is attempting to look at, well, what is the new paradigm? Where do we need to go? And many people have chosen over the last, how many people would you say are homeschooled across the nation? Do you have any idea in your association how many students are being homeschooled?
Certainly. Back in 1998, October 98, Newsweek magazine put the number at 1.2 million children. I would guess it's close to that now. Maybe 1.2, 1.1 and a half million children are being taught at home. I've seen some homeschool advocates now say it's as high as 2 to 2.5 million. But the number is kind of soft because not every state requires you to register with the state agency. For instance, here in Massachusetts, we just register with our local school boards, and no state agency collates those numbers. So, you know, they're pretty soft. And then there's a fair number of people who simply don't want to register because they don't want to get involved in disputes with their schools. Or
I know quite a few of those in Virginia.
Yeah, so they make, you know, so people make the number up, so to speak, based on these underground homeschoolers or the soft states. And, you know, but I feel comfortable saying 1.2 to 1.5 now in the year 2000. That many children are being homeschooled, and you know, with an average number of 3 children per family, although homeschoolers typically have more kids per family than the population at large.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Various studies have shown that. You know, I think homeschoolers have something like 3.6 children, whereas the average American family has 2.6.
You are listening to Children Come First. We're here with Patrick Ferenga, from the Holt, president of Holt Associates and publisher of Growing Without Schooling, which is a homeschooling based organization, and John Holt's bookstore catalog. Patrick, will you give us a website, an email address, and a phone number for people to call you?
Oh, absolutely. If they want to visit our website, they just go to www.holtgws.com. That's HOLTGWS.com. They can also call our 800 number. It's actually an 888 number. Our toll-free number is 888-925-9298, and you can request a free catalog, and we'll be happy to mail that out to you, along with information about our magazine, Growing Without Schooling.
Is there an email address people can put?
They can email us at holtgws.com as well. You could just write what would it be?
No. There's an at sign in between there, Patrick, somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, they'd have to.
That's it. They could email administrator@holtgws.com.
Is that all one word?
Yes.
Okay. No abbreviations. administrator@holtgws.com.
Right.
Now, let's go back to the work that you are doing personally and the work of John Holt, and we're talking about homeschooling. Homeschooling is, people don't have all kinds of perceptions about what homeschooling is. Is it mom and dad staying, or mom staying home and giving classes and that kind of thing? Or is there groups, or what is homeschooling really like?
Well, homeschooling is incredibly broad. I mean, exactly as you described it, there are families that homeschool that way, no doubt. And if they're comfortable with that and it works, I know families that it does work for and they flourish with it, that's great. But basically, the idea of turning your home into a miniature school was not what John Holt had in mind or what we had Growing Without Schooling advocate. I mean, the title alone, you know, Growing Without Schooling, shows that you're going to grow and learn whether you go to school or not. And that was one of these points that John picked up from Ivan Illich and really ran with. He realized that schooling is not the same as education, which, and indeed, in today's world now, education is not the same as learning. Education is only what the State Board of Education says it is, but learning is actually much, much, much broader. So John came up with the word unschooling to try and help people break out of the mold of doing school at home. It basically means using real-life experiences and your own schedules, your schedules of your family and your schedules for, you know, what you want to do, for learning instead of using school schedules. And a lot of people are, more and more people are coming around to seeing the value of this because you burn out, just like teachers burn out doing school at home. You run into a lot of the same problems. In fact, John often wrote that he thinks how children fail is valuable for homeschoolers to read, if only to prevent them from making the mistakes schools do. There's nothing about homeschooling in the book, per se, but he thought it was a very good cautionary tale. And indeed, we see this happening all the time. The editor of our magazine, Susanna Scheffer, just did a conference in Florida. I was talking with her this morning. A very, very big conference. 6,000, 7,000 people show up at this one. It's down in Orlando. And people were walking up to the table saying things to her. This is an actual example. A woman said, you know, how do I know when my children are bored? They just don't like doing school at home, and I don't know what else to do. So Susanna said, well, how do you know, the kids will tell you that they're bored. They'll learn. It says, well, I don't get it. Every time I take out these books, their eyes glaze over. Susanna said, well, that's the hint right there. That's the problem. They're telling you with that they're bored. Of course, we think in school, you've got to eat your vegetables, so to speak. So we don't think of that as a signal that they're bored. It's just like, that's the expected reaction, is you're force-feeding somebody.
An eager vegetable, that's an interesting commentary.
And, unschooling unnerves some people because it does not resemble school. And so when there are these long periods of time where a child may not be doing anything but reading, say, or maybe not even be doing reading that you consider academic. Maybe they're reading, you know, Agatha Christie books or, instructions about how to build model planes. Or one family I'm familiar with, the son, when he was given the choice, because he hated reading, so they said, well, why don't you pick stuff you wanted to read? Well, he picked up encyclopedias about baseball and facts and figures about baseball, everything he could get about baseball. And they were typically charts and not narrative. The family was, you know, fortunately, they were patient, and they let him go through this. And sure enough, he got was inspired to start picking up biographies of ball players and history of baseball. And the Black Sox scandal got him, the 1920s, got him interested in history. And one thing led to another, and eventually he was able to get his love of reading back. But we forget that so much of what goes on in a homeschool can be radically and for the most part completely different than what goes on in school, and it's great. Yeah, that is one of homeschooling's strengths.
Sounds like we have to get ourselves out of the way.
A lot of that is, you know, Daria, a lot of it is just, you know, realizing that we ourselves were not trusted to learn. You know, we with very few exceptions, I mean, there are second generation homeschoolers, but they tend to be pretty young, in their mid-20s, in my experience. Folks like us who've been around, we went through school. You know, that's all we know. And so it seems really hard to say, okay, well, you can study American Sign Language, or, you know, even if you're using a curriculum, even if you're doing, say, a correspondence school program, something that tells you what to do every day, most homeschoolers finish that in an hour or two. I mean, because there's not that constant pressure of interruption, of switching classes, of dealing with 30 kids, so they're able to do that. And suddenly these families find themselves, they just can't do that much. You can't spend 6 hours a day teaching your kids. I mean, you can, and I know families who try to do it, but both the kids and the families get pretty upset with one another after a certain point. At some point, even if you start doing traditional school at home, you start to realize there's a lot more that's possible and a lot more that can be done that's not school-like at all.
One of the questions that most people ask about homeschooling is, my children won't have socialization schools if they stay home. Well, how do you address that issue?
One of the best reasons for homeschooling is the social life. Your children are getting out in the real world, meeting people who are younger and older. They are interacting with children of various backgrounds. You, the parent, are serving as a model for this. You are showing them by arranging these play dates, making the phone calls, doing the driving, setting your home up to be welcoming to other children, that this is how we socialize. They get a very clear idea and what this is all about. And of course, school children are your children's friends too. My kids don't live in a bubble. We don't isolate them. Now, I know some homeschoolers take exception to this, and they do want to, you know, have what is termed selective socialization. And if they wish to do that, you know, only having their children associate with other homeschoolers of a particular religious persuasion, well, they're allowed to do that, just like you're allowed to do it in private schools that do the same thing. Selective socialization happens in our public schools with honors programs and all sorts of different things where kids with certain GPAs or certain backgrounds are screened out and kept together. So it's not true that homeschooling is the only, isolates children. It doesn't do that at all unless of course the parents choose to do it. And usually under the same logic and reasons that the same sort of isolation happens in school, to help a gifted child or to promote certain religious or ethnic beliefs. But by and large, homeschoolers have shown that, and you know, I've been here since 1981, so I know this is 19 years of my own personal experience speaking, that homeschoolers are incredibly social. It's almost a necessity as a homeschooler to go out there and have a social life and for you to show your children how to have a social life. I mean, that's one of the things that we forget in school. It's a very strange idea that socialization, and according to school, means 30 kids the same age learning the same thing at the same time. I don't understand how that barely even qualifies as instruction or competent instruction in my mind. But you know, this is what passes for socialization. You know, the ride to the school bus, the recess, and then perhaps some extracurriculars. Life is much richer than that, and you know, as my kids, I've got three girls who we homeschool, and two of them have been in school of their own volition. They wanted to go see what it's like. They both came out having seen what it's like, and they have friends who are in school, they have friends who are homeschoolers, and they have friends who are adults. They have friends who are young children who are not yet school age. They don't make these distinctions. It's funny how school does. I mean, we talked earlier about how we as parents have to break the mold to trust our children and to trust that learning is taking place, even though it may not resemble the school learning. In socialization, the same thing happens. Now, there have been many, many studies about homeschoolers and socialization, and not one of the studies has found homeschoolers lacking. Indeed, several of them have indicated that homeschoolers' social skills, I'm thinking in particular of this study by Dr. Larry Shires at the University of Florida that was done in the early 90s, where they had child psychologists, school teachers, social workers in a room with a one-way mirror, and they're watching a control group, an experimental group of homeschool kids and school kids playing together. And they said, okay, which children are better able to resolve conflicts? Which children are the most sociable? Which children play together the best? They found out it was the homeschool children over and over again. And so he was able to theorize, which is something, again, the theory only proves something that Holt was saying even before homeschooling. John Holt was writing in books like Freedom and Beyond in the early 70s that children are socialized by the way adults behave and by the adult culture, and that we really need to look at ourselves and how we behave before we start criticizing the kids. And what this researcher said is that, you know, perhaps by being socialized by adults, these children have learned better behaviors for coping with differences and misbehavior and playing games together and so on.
Well, as an aside, socialization in our country we consider to be out there with vast amounts of people interacting,
mm-hmm.
and learning the culture of our particular society. And what we found is that depth in the learning process of socialization, direct cause and effect, which only happens when you are intimate in a family relationship, is what causes socialization to be ingrained in a person. So we have misperceptions about how we learn the socialization process, thinking that it takes great numbers of people and great numbers of exposure, when in fact it is the real world cause and effect of the socialization that we have. Because our school systems are contrived social relationships. The cause and effect for doing something wrong in a school is to get expelled, which is, you know, to remove someone from the process is really not a cause and effect, so to speak. So It is the family in close proximity and intimate relationships, which can be at times very intense, that teaches a child to have perseverance and to learn the skills, which is exactly what you were saying. We are talking right now with Patrick Ferenga. Patrick is president of Holt Associates and publisher of Growing Without Schooling. Also manages John Holt's bookstore catalog, which is full of books of various natures on schooling, learning, homeschooling, and etc. Patrick has also published a book, The Beginner's Guide to Homeschooling, which we are going to talk about in the second half hour because it is quite an extraordinary book. You can reach Patrick at www.holtgws, that stands for Growing Without Schooling.com. That's www.holtgws.com. Or you may call at toll free 888-925-9298. That's 888-925-9298. You can reach us here at any time. This is Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. You may reach us as well at toll-free 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PROKIDS. Or you may email us at ProKids, PROKIDS, at RLC.net. That's PROKIDS at RLC.net. Or you can join us on our website, which we will have a new website very shortly, but this one is www.rlc.net/front/ProKids. That's rlc.net/ProKids, PROKIDS. And please join us in our second half hour. We're going to be speaking with Patrick about homeschooling in general and about his new book, The Beginner's Guide to Homeschooling, which is extraordinarily resourceful for anyone who would like to find out about schooling or find out the resources in homeschooling. And Patrick is also available on other issues in terms of learning in the Holt work as well. So please join us for our second half hour, which will begin in a few moments after we listen to our station break and our sponsors. Thank you and join us.
I don't believe that an SAT 1 score is enough, so they require AP and SAT 2 scores. And, you know, that's fine for people who really want to, you know, get financial aid and go to college in Georgia and stuff, but you know what? There are a lot of other colleges that don't make life that difficult. I'm reminded of the story of Grant Colfax. He was way before there were books about gaining admission to homes, to college for homeschoolers. He was one of the first, I believe it was 1982, Grant applied to Harvard. But before that, everyone knows he got into Harvard. He was pre-med because he was raised on a goat farm and pretty much his experience of schooling was being unschooled on a farm and raising dairy goats, which made him a very attractive candidate to Harvard because here is someone who not only had written articles about breeding dairy goats, and was interested in medicine and had this wonderful background in biology as a result of that. But he also ran a successful business and was able to sell it at a profit before he went to school, went off to college. So he was, you know, very attractive. But the Colfax is, you know, in that book, Homeschooling, Homeschooling for Excellence, talk about how his first choice was Johns Hopkins. But Johns Hopkins never had a homeschooled applicant. And they didn't know how to deal with him, so they, you know, after sending him through interview after interview and blah, 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 they finally said, okay, we're going to admit you, but we're going to have to admit you as a foreign student. Well, Grant didn't want that, and so he said Harvard was much more, yes, they made me go through many interviews, but they were gracious about it, and they at least consider me an American, so he wound up going there. But the world has changed so much. The Wall Street Journal just, gosh, sometime in February, had a front-page story about how homeschoolers are getting accepted wherever they are applying. And the New York Times on May 24th had an article about unschooling, about student-led learning, and how that is resulting in successful college admissions and how well they're doing in college. So the fact that homeschoolers are getting into college is a practically old hat now.
Well, I'm impressed by this. I'm just totally impressed, and I'm sure it's just a partial list. I mean, University of Pennsylvania, University of Virginia, Harvard, Yale, Penn State, Mississippi State, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It just goes on and on. And Haverford in Pennsylvania, Carnegie Mellon, College of William and Mary. So no longer are students who are homeschooled kept from the process of higher education, which is absolutely wonderful to know.
Mm-hmm.
Times certainly have changed from the time we all started this many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to the nuts and bolts now that we've done your book, and talk about parents as teachers. What are the qualifications for a parent as a teacher?
Well, what I'm going to say is obviously going to be different than what a school-at-home person is going to say. You know, what I think the most important qualities are for being a teacher of your child is, first of all, not having a degree in education. By the way, there is no state that requires you to have a teaching certificate in order to teach your child at home.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
There isn't a single one, and there is no evidence that having a teaching certificate makes you a better homeschooler. There was actually a study done in Washington State of homeschoolers who were certified teachers and those who weren't. What they found was the kids whose parents were certified teachers did a little better on standardized tests in the first year. But after 3 years, the parents who weren't certified teachers, their kids caught up. So you could either say the parents got better or the kids got better, or both. You learn by doing, so to speak. So, you just have to do away with that idea that you're inadequate to teach your child at home just because you don't have a teaching credential. As I point out in the Beginner's Guide to Homeschooling, many private schools do not require teaching credentials. They prefer candidates to teaching teachers who actually have an expertise in an area such as history or English or geography or science. They're not looking for someone who has a general education degree. And this has long been the case in private schools, which are often referred to as being more elite and better preparing students than public schools, which require the general education degree. And indeed, we're seeing throughout the United States the whole general education degree losing its luster. In fact, it's very hard now to find four-year college degree programs just in education. Most of them are requiring teachers to be to major in a particular subject, such as English or history, and then take a fifth additional year, usually in conjunction with in-the-classroom teaching, to earn an education degree. So it's the first thing is to just let go of the idea that you have to be a professional teacher. The next thing is you have to enjoy being with your children. And I don't mean love your kids. We all love our kids. But I mean you actually have to enjoy their foolishness. You have to enjoy being around their passions. I mean, we all know how passionate and upset children can get over toys or the rules of a game or just over certain topics and issues. And if you don't enjoy, if you can't step back and appreciate the humor and say, well, she's four now, she'll outgrow this, or that's okay, I understand that, I understand why you're so upset. If you just are going to blow your top and have no patience for this, that to me is something you have to consider about getting into homeschooling, because you're going to be with your kids a lot more. So you do have to enjoy being around their immoderate passions, around, as I said, their foolishness. And of course, kids are foolish, but that's part of growing up. That's, again, that fantasy play we talked about earlier. You have to enjoy being around that. And if not, fine. There are other people who we hope in schools do enjoy being around that. And even if you don't, now I'm not saying that you have to be a martyr, and please, I don't ever want that impression to come across about homeschooling, because there are other parents, other adults that you can and should engage in your children's life, too, so you get a break. I mean, you as a parent do need a break from their foolishness and immoderate passions, too. And so it's very important that, that you create a support group for you as an adult. But in terms of homeschooling, there is nothing. I've seen parents who are illiterate homeschool their children and become literate in the process, and their children become literate, and life goes on. But, you know, the thing is, they joined together. They said, this is an adventure for us together. We will do this together. And that sometimes means not doing things that look like school, you know, taking days off or weeks off to pursue certain topics, or just, you know, even things that don't seem to have anything to do with school. Like if you have a sick relative, visiting them and nurturing them, caring for them. You can do that in a home school. You know, you're not going to, you know, be penalized because you missed 3 weeks of school and suddenly, you know, the classes move 20 pages ahead. Now, I know some homeschoolers, as I indicated throughout the conversation, that that is the case, that they buy into a curriculum or a program that says you got to be on page 310 of the math text by April 20th in order to take such and such a test. And, you know, and that's fine, again, if that's working. But I know the richness of homeschooling and the richness of just living a full life for you and your children sometimes means you're going to miss those pages. And so, in fact, sometimes it means you may not even use a textbook for a year or years. You use other materials, other sources, other people. And that's one of the reasons why no state requires you to be a certified teacher, because it's not a big mystery how to help children learn. If you were doing it from the minute your children were born, you were loving them, you're interacting with them, you're answering their questions, you're keeping mental notes or writing notes if you're a writer, or a journal, or videotaping, or using cassette tapes to preserve moments and memories, and reflecting on them. What do they mean? Oh, gosh, I didn't realize that, you know, my daughter's interest, and this is an actual case, my daughter's interest in sewing would eventually lead to her becoming a violinist. There's a wonderful book called Child's Work by Nancy Wallace, and she describes how her children, her son playing with plastic soldiers and her daughter playing with sewing, eventually led to their careers as professional musicians, with one of them becoming a concert pianist, the son, who loved to play with soldiers and do the classic patterns of phalanx and the Roman legions and studying how all these structures went together to fight wars. He became a composer, an award-winning composer, you know, because of his, as the mom points out, with his ability to indulge his imagination about structure and how things go together. And his daughter is not a composer, but she's her daughter is not a composer, but she's a brilliant violinist. And you know, her warmth and her colors that she gets out of the violin, the mother feels, are directly related to all the time she spent sewing and playing and with the material and looking at the colors and thinking about these things. So it's not, you know, it's not this read a book and take a test teaching thing that you have to do. It really is much more enjoyable in one sense, because it enables you to be their parent, and that is the most important thing. Teachers are dispensable. You can find a teacher to teach biology. You can find a teacher to teach the algebra that you don't know, or the marine biology that you haven't got a clue about, or indeed if you're just teaching basic addition and you and your child are not or just at loggerheads. This happened with my wife and my oldest child. Found another homeschooling parent to explain it to her, and she was much more receptive to hear it from another parent. You can do those things, but you can't replace being a parent. You can't go out and find another parent for your child. So the most important thing is that you enjoy your time with your child, so you enjoy being their parent, and that the lines of communication are open. I am a firm believer that any problem, and this includes in school or in a school and home situation, but most importantly, in the sort of homeschooling I'm talking about, which is often referred to as unschooling, communication is important. If the child does not fear talking to the parent, and the parent does not fear talking to the child, any problem can be addressed and worked with. It's when people fear the consequences of expressing an opinion or expressing a fear that problems arise. And parents, I'm amazed at the resourcefulness of homeschooling parents with very little money. I mean, homeschoolers, by and large, are not a wealthy bunch of people. what they're able to do, the resources and people that they're able to ferret out of their neighborhoods, and the solutions that they arrive at with their children are really remarkable and inspiring in many ways.
You have been listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here with Patrick Faranga. Patrick is president of the Holt Associates and publisher of Growing Without Schooling and manager of John Holt's bookstore catalog. And also, he's published his own book, The Beginner's Guide to Homeschooling. You can reach Patrick at www.holtgws.com, HOLTGWS.com, or toll free 888-925-9298, or you can reach us here at Children Come First, toll free 877-PRO-KIDS, that's 877-PROKIDS, or you may email us at ProKids, PROKIDS, at RLC.net, ProKids at RLC.net, or join us on our website at www.rlc.net/ProKids. Now, Patrick, we have been talking about various issues regarding homeschooling, and I wondered if you could just tell us, what are the benefits to homeschooling children, especially for people like working parents? Suppose there's two working parents and their children are having trouble, you know, and they're constantly pressuring the child to go to this reform place to help them with this reading or do that. What can you tell us about the pros and cons about homeschooling your child versus sending them to school?
Well, the pros are, first of all, you're going to be able to work with your child at their own pace. Not every child learns to read at the same age. Not every child learns to write. Some learn sooner, some learn later than what school says. And indeed, you know, it used to be fourth grade was when the age that they expected every child to be able to read up to grade level, whatever that means, depends on the school's definition. Now, just through educational fiat, we're saying now it has to be third grade is when every child has to be able to learn to read. If your child doesn't fit into that schedule, and there are many, I mean, as we see with learning disabilities and people raising all sorts of flags about slow learners, and indeed fast learners, homeschooling allows you to go at that pace. So the first thing is it allows you to work with your child as an individual, because kids learn as an individually. They don't learn in bunches. They can learn some things in bunches. We all go to lectures and stuff, but you know, I think if we all reflect on our experience, the most important lessons that we've learned have been ones that we've either taught ourselves or learned with memorable teachers in small group size situations. And so that's the first pro, is it allows you to work with your child's strengths. You're not always going to be, in school, what often happens is they focus on the hole in the donut. They say, oh, your child is not reading up to such and such a grade level, so therefore we have to spend all this time and resources on that, instead of focusing on the donut and saying, well, your child isn't up to grade level here, maybe 6 months behind, but they're fine and all these others. In fact, they're exceeding your grade level in science, so why don't we do some more science?
I love your visual analogies, the hole in the donut. Keep on going, Patrick. Thank you.
Okay. And homeschooling lets you do that, because one thing that kids need that we don't get a lot in school, and this is true when we were in school, is self-esteem, that you're a good learner. We're told that you're good in some things and you're bad in others, and of course then there are those superstars who are good at everything. Most of us fall, in that medium ground where we have some strengths and some weaknesses. Homeschooling allows you to focus on those strengths and those things that you do well. And over time, if you do need to address those weaknesses, let's say you are a slow reader, if you've got enough money in the bank, so to speak, by being good at math and doing calculation in your head and having, Yeah, maybe work on a Math Counts team or Odyssey of the Mind. Again, these are actual examples I know of homeschoolers who are poor readers, things that they were able to do. By gaining the self-esteem that they could do math very well, then they were able to go back and say, well, now I'm ready to try and study to be a better reader, or now I'm better qualified to understand why people wanted me to read. It really is interesting how one of the strengths of homeschooling to me is, again, the interaction between the child and the subject matter and the adults. And you have so much more flexibility for dealing with it. So that's a big pro in my mind. Another pro of homeschooling is it enables you as a parent to really get a handle on what learning is all about. Because again, as we said, what we thought learning is what goes on in schools. But what we're finding as adults is that all that stuff, 90% of what we study, we don't use. We really don't use. I mean, there have been so many studies that have shown this, that little of what is learned in school is transferable to the outside world. Working in teams, working for common goals, learning to use computers. We weren't trained to use computers. Every one of us uses a computer every day now. We never learned that in school in the 60s and 70s. Didn't have to. I dare say probably right up until the mid-80s, yet we're able to do it. So I think it homeschooling pro for an adult, too, is it lets you get a much broader vision of what learning is about and sort of learn outside of the box and think outside of the box of what school is doing to kids by presenting this view of reality, which is completely driven by test scores and class rankings, and starting to get a better idea of, well, gosh, you know, when I actually graduate here, no one's going to be giving me standardized tests on my job every year. And what does that mean? Homeschoolers are desirable applicants. There was a wonderful article in the New York Times back in February about high-tech companies who are hiring kids, and some of them were homeschoolers. Most of them weren't, though. But the article was high-paying jobs and no diplomas. They don't care about diplomas anymore. The world is changing. Homeschoolers knew this when, back in the 80s, John Holt was saying, you don't need a high school diploma to get into college. High school diplomas aren't worth the paper they're printed on. Let's be serious. You know, you can take a GED at 16 or the SAT at 16 and get on with life and do just well. Well, there's a lot of evidence that shows that. And now, you know, the high-tech industry and other industries are showing that they need workers. There's a shortage of workers. So they're not going to wait till they get their college diplomas. They're going to hire them now. Just as long as you can prove you can do this work, let's get you. And that's one of the things that homeschoolers can do, is they can prove they can do things. My oldest daughter, she just turned 14 on Saturday. But one of the things she wanted to do was to go to a local high school to take a biology class. And they told her she wouldn't be able to do this till she was 16, because they don't do that level of lab biology until sophomore, junior year. So my wife, being resourceful, started to talk to other homeschoolers and found out that our local community college, Middlesex Community College, offers biology classes to homeschoolers. And as long as a parent comes with a child that's under the community college age, they can participate in the class fully. So my daughter did this, and she loved it. She learned biology, or intro to biology, from a university, a college professor and assistant in the lab, 2 years ahead of what she would have done if she was in high school. Homeschooling has these remarkable, and I'm not saying my daughter is no science whiz. I'm just trying to say, it's amazing how many opportunities and how flexible homeschooling can be, and how the whole concept of education has changed for everybody, the parents and the children, once you get into it.
Relatively, what you're saying is, if I may paraphrase it, mm-hmm. is that students learn when they are passionate about learning, when it's relative to what they need in their life, and when it has meaning to them.
Yes.
So for the most part, what happens in school is that we receive instruction that comes from on high somewhere, starting in Washington, all the way down from the Department of Education through legislators, and filters down into the Department of Education of the state, that filters down into the school board, the superintendent, the principal, and all the way down till it finally gets through to the teacher, and lest we say through the textbook companies, into the hands of the students. And by the time it filters all the way through, it has absolutely no meaning in life whatsoever,
right,
which is why our children are bored, committing suicide, doing drugs, and all the other antisocial kinds of things, because we are not listening to the fact that school is irrelevant to real world cause and effect.
That's right. That's right. And it's so ironic that half the time, when, if you read between the lines of all the school reform stuff, it's, you see phrases like, well, we're doing this to make a high school diploma mean something. We're doing this so that high tech will have its workers. You know, we're doing this. You begin to wonder after a while, like, well, then why did we go to school? Was the diploma meaningless then? It really is amazing. Did we have no standards back in the 60s? Were there no standards when we were in school? Or, you know, what is going on? How can we be living in an economy that well, right now it looks like we're faltering, but up until now is like the envy of the world for 5 years with such dummies at the helm. You know, what's going on here? And this whole idea of education and the economy being so inextricably linked, I think, is something that we really have to look very closely at. I think there's a link, but it's a very weak one. I think there are many, many other factors that play into a good economy other than hard schools. I mean, after all, if hard schools make good economies, why are the economies of North Korea and Russia in such disasters?
Well, one of the interesting things I find is that 100+ years ago, the reason we began core curriculum and time spent units was because we wanted some standard for students to go into our colleges and universities. And here we are 100 years later, and they're saying, you know, we really don't want this in our students because they have no creativity and no critical thinking skills, and yet they are the ones who created the mess we've partially created the mess we have today.
That's
not
great.
To mention our Cartesian Newtonian principles on the having to dissect everything into parts and our mechanistic view of the world, and children are not human beings but machines.
That's
walking
great.
Around with brains that can be input and output accessed. So our homeschooling movement and our movements towards democratic schools and various other alternative schools are all movements towards saying that our children are human beings, that we need to respect them, to understand that learning will happen no matter what, and that children are propelled into learning when they are passionate and when it has meaning in their lives. So I've just summed up probably the last 5 radio programs that I've done. But Patrick, in our last few minutes here, is there anything you'd like to sum up with that I haven't really covered, or anything that you'd like to say in 2 minutes?
I guess the most important thing is to enjoy your family. If you're going to homeschool, don't let the curriculum, don't let the concept of school become the tail that wags the dog. You really have an opportunity to do so much more than just give instruction to your children. You have a chance to build lasting memories and a lifetime of strong communication between you. I think that is far more important and is going to do you much better in the long haul of the strife through life than just making sure your kids get great test scores.
You have been listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. You may reach us anytime toll-free at 877-PRO-KIDS. That's 877-PRO-KIDS. Or email us at ProKids, ProKids, at rlc.net. That's ProKids@rlc.net. We have been with Patrick Ferenga today, president of the Holt Associates, publisher of Growing Without Schooling, manager of John Holt's bookstore catalog, and author of The Beginner's Guide to Homeschooling. You may reach him at www.holtgws.com or call him. That's www.holtgws.com, or you may call him toll-free at 888-925-9298. That's 888-929-9298. 925-9298. Patrick, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Daria.
And I always enjoy having you on. You're just a wonderful guest. And hopefully you'll have some people calling in about your publication, Growing Without Schooling, or some other information about homeschooling and all of your efforts. I thank you so much. And
thank you,
everything
Daria.
That you've done for the homeschooling movement and to promote John Holt's work in helping our children able to become more human beings and able to manifest the kinds of things in their own personal selves that we'd like to see for all children. So thank you for everything, and please join us again next week for our program when we will have, as always, wonderful guests relating to children, their families, education. Please have a wonderful week and give a hug to your children for us. Goodbye.